Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how do you know? How do you know anything? How clear are you about what you know, what you believe, why? Because maybe you'll be challenged. And how? Maybe the more you believe, the more you'll be challenged. So some of us love to be challenged because we don't mind that maybe we don't really know anything. And so we're learning to live better. And that's all relative too. So again, we're going to be entering and we're going to be speaking with and I'll be introducing one of my favorite authors who wrote the book Effortless Living, Jason Gregory. Jason, welcome to Energy Stew.
Great to be back on again, Peter. Thanks for having me.
So what are we talking about? What do we know? You know, because I think we bank so much of our prospects on what we believe, what we think, and then we get disappointed a lot.
Yeah,
you know that old saying that, you know, what God will do to your plans.
Yeah, exactly.
God will, you know, all you have to do is have plans and God will ruin them. So what can we depend on? Can you tell us what we can depend on?
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned religion because, you know, a lot of people use the word faith when they talk about, you know, trying to stay strong with, you know, God throwing our plans up in the air. You know, I prefer the word trust actually, as opposed to faith. I think that we need to somehow have the tenacity to trust our own life and its own path and where it's leading, you know.
But how does trust differ from faith?
I don't think it, I mean, it doesn't differ somewhat. I sort of just getting away from the word faith a little bit because of its religious connotation.
Okay. You know,
I prefer trust. Again, faith is like, maybe it's slightly different because, you know, faith, you have faith in where it's going, but you're kind of not sure where it's going. Where trust is kind of like you're trusting it because you know that it's whatever the energy of the Tao, whatever it is in your life moving, it has its best intentions.
I get it. It's like you have faith in what you believe.
Yeah.
Versus having trust in what you don't have any idea about.
Exactly. And as you know, Peter, from, you know, studying Eastern thought and this and that, you know, what do we know? You know, ultimately, like
a lot of
what we know are only our beliefs and our perceptions of the world. So, you know, we're coming to life with already a template of how we think that the world should be according to our own conditioning. So,
right.
Eastern thought is about getting rid of kind of, or cleaning your perception to see life as it truly is. And then you start to have this more of this innate trust.
Right. Life. But there's ways of doing it. For instance, I've talked to a very advanced meditator who said that he has met many meditators who were trying to get rid of self.
Yes.
They're trying to erase any idea of I. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that that's possible because we're conscious beings who have formed to be conscious in. And that form is formed by forces beyond our control.
Yeah.
For instance, our astrology, our human design, and even our culture that we're born into, the conditioning of the culture has memes and archetypes that become part of our genetic structure.
Yes. Yeah, no, you're 100% correct. It's, you know, and I think that when people say that to get rid of self and this and that, I think they might go a little bit too far and off base with the teachings, because basically if you look at Zen Buddhism or Vedanta or one of these ones who emphasize that, it's not so much getting rid of the self or getting rid of the ego. It's more so loosening the grip on it. So it's not that you don't have an identity. It's just that you've loosened the grip on the belief in your identity. So there's a difference there, like, because you still have an identity, but you haven't bought the whole show, you know, like, oh, Jason's having all of these problems. When, you know, is Jason really having all of these problems, or is he just wound up? Are these just old projections confusing?
He thinks he's having all these problems.
Yeah. So you got to be intelligent about it. You know, if you want to practice deep sadhana, like deep spiritual practice, where you're trying to get rid of the self, then I would say that being in a society and in a city and in a community is not the best place for you. I would say go to the mountains and do that work there, you know.
Right. And you do that work and you can be like this one guy who I interview occasionally. He can meditate for 15 hours straight in bliss.
Yeah.
But what happens when he's done?
You got to come back to the world. That's the whole fact of the matter. So, you know, you don't have to meditate for 15 hours. You know, you know, meditation is a good thing to loosen the grip on your sense of your persona system. It's what you develop sort of a distance to it, you know, so you're not caught in it. You're not wound up as Peter or as Jason all the time. And you're not ready to approach the world like that. You've begun to dissociate and distance yourself from it. And so, you know, in Taoism, they call this like the joker in the pack. You become like the genuine pretender. So you live in the world as a person, but you haven't sold the whole show that you are this person. You've identified with the deeper part of yourself where the Tao moves through, that empty aspect of yourself, the zero perspective, they call it in Taoism, as opposed to, you know, the full cup, the full cup instead of the empty cup. So, you know, there's just an emphasis on, you know, this is what I like about Taoism, which is similar to Buddhism in some sense too, is they don't have any sort of concepts of that you shouldn't be the ego or you should remain as the self. They just give you techniques and that to remain in a certain state of being. So it's more to do with health and sanity than it is to do with transcending the ego.
Right. So it's not about if you have an empty cup, it's about how you agree or not with your full cup.
Yeah, exactly. It's how you agree with your full cup, and it's your capacity to remain more so in the empty cup than the full cup. So it's more of it's an appreciation that there's both the full and the empty cup. You know, you do have your persona, but what will happen is if you can kind of reside a little bit more in sort of that, from that empty state, then it does have an effect on your persona system a little bit. Like, you know, this is why meditation, you know, science has stated the East knows that meditation does have an effect on how your ego reacts to the world. So, you know, if you're an experienced meditator and someone does something to you, you won't instantly, you know, react. You have,
right.
It's had an effect on you where you have sort of an awareness of, you know, maybe it's not, you know, it's not my best interest to act like a mongrel dog, and maybe just to see the situation for what it is, you know.
But so, I think what you're referring to between an empty cup and a full cup, and it's better to for that cup to have less in it, is that it's not a still cup.
It's not a still cup.
Whatever is in it is constantly turbulent.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's right. Yeah, and you know, and you know, Taoism and some other paths. Again, I got to be clear here. They don't really, what do I say? That they don't believe that there's a sort of a split within us. You know what I mean? Like, there's some spiritual paths that will say there's the ego and there's the true self, and then you know, they're completely isolated and different. They're sort of coming from a different perspective. They're looking at it more as an integral system.
Where,
good. Yeah. They're looking at it from, because they don't believe that the mind and body are separate. They understand that the mind and body are actually a unified system. Cognition is embodied, you know, and this is what a lot of people don't understand. Right. Cognition is embodied. So there has to be Taoism and other spiritual practices were designed based on that principle. It's based on not mind-body dualism, but instead mind-body holism.
So I love that. And to me, what that means really is that we're not separate from God.
No, exactly. No, we're not.
And that's really what that says, is that we are God. And so let's behave like that and own the creation of everything as one, including our stories, including our fears and our craziness, and just see that that's the unfolding of the universe that we're creating.
It's just the energy moving through you as you know what I mean? It's not something to run away and try to avoid, you know, so run away from and try to avoid, I should say. So, you know, everyone has to sort of appreciate at least sometime in their life that they themselves are an extension of the universe as the universe, you know, so whether you want to believe that or not, you only have to look at, you know, just the cosmic sphere to understand that, you know, you are a part of that. So all of these things that are coming through you as you are not inherently bad or even inherently good. They're just things that are happening to you. Some are things that we have to work with and deal with, and other things we need to integrate as well. So
I think that's very empowering, is mm-hmm. to understand that it's all right, that everything, it all fits in some way. You know, I'm looking back, I've become this old sage because I'm entitled to be sage at 75 years old. And I look back on a life full of worry, full of doubt, full of struggles, of many disappointments and many dreams and plans squashed. And yet it all worked out.
Yeah.
In its own way. You know, sometimes you just have to look at it differently, and then the next blossom grows in life, and we find a new world. And so I've worked with thousands of people over the years, and so many people have been at the end of their rope, you know, that they just don't feel like there's a thread left to survive with. And what do you think happens? Life shows up in miraculous ways, and all of a sudden, it wasn't so bad.
No, exactly. Yeah. And well, it doesn't matter how much we argue with life, does it, Peter? It's we're going that way regardless. So it's either, you know, you loosen your grip on your struggles and your fears and your doubts.
But they can be terrible.
Of course.
Tragedies, lost loved ones, lost family, terrible accidents, things happen. And, you know, you can live very much as a victim.
Yeah.
And really struggle with that, or somehow understand that there's some divine plan that we just don't know about.
Yeah.
And that there's a larger picture to life, which is multidimensional, and we're part of that, a soul journey that's not just based on this life and these stories.
Yeah. Well, victim mentality is it's a common one, more common now so than ever, I believe, where people are just, they feel a victim of their own life, their circumstances, and this and that, and then they lose this capacity to trust their own life, which is actually quite sad when you think about it, you know, because
but we hold on, our ego has so many judgments that we hold on to.
Yeah. And a lot of people who suffer from, you know, in the irony is you see a lot of people suffering from victim mentality. Some of them haven't even had really that much tragedy in their life.
No, you ask them, they have.
Everybody
I've learned not to tell somebody, you think you have it bad, you ought to see what happened to so-and-so. You can't say that to anybody.
No. What I mean by that is, like you mentioned tragedy before, like saying a loved one got killed or something like this.
Yeah.
Their tragedy is they didn't have the right career move, or, you know, all of these things that are not, you know, to you and I as the outsiders aren't necessarily that bad, and actually aren't that bad really, as opposed to, you know, say if your significant other or someone got killed tragically. So, you know, I think we tend to magnify our problems a lot too, you know. That's sort of what I'm sort of getting at there, that, you know, we don't have to be a victim of our life if our ego doesn't get into the situation of trying to magnify small problems, you know. If someone does die, a significant other or something like this, it's perfectly normal to grieve and to go through that process. You know what I mean? Like it's idiotic to go up to that person and say, just trust the process, this and that. You can't do that in that moment. You have to let them work through what's happening to them, you know. As opposed to someone who's magnifying the problem, like, oh, some guy stood on my foot today, and it's like, get over it, you know. So, yeah. You know, it's
right. Some people don't want any aspect of suffering, and yet we come here for our soul growth through challenges, and to honor that this pain we feel from so many things in life actually helps us reach into our heart deeper and expand our light. And so there are a lot of ways to hold this. You know, so I've become a philosopher on how to hold life so that we can appreciate it more rather than be victimized by it so much. Mm.
Exactly. Well, it comes back to our original point of trust and trying to be skillful in life as well, you know, like, so living with life as more so as opposing life and not fearing obstacles. You know, I would say don't fear obstacles as well. Like if you have an obstacle to overcome, that, you know, tackle that in its due time. You know what I mean? Like if it has to happen, you know, most people say these days when they wake up, their life, as soon as they wake up, their whole day is about putting out fires, you know, so.
But there's nothing wrong with putting out fires as long as you hold it in wholeness.
Yeah, in wholeness, yeah. You understand your integral part in all of it, you know, so you don't get swept up that, oh, why these obstacles again? You just approach it with a bit of disassociation, like a distancing, like what we were talking about earlier. Well, and
yeah, you will weigh it.
And this comes, you know, I told the story in the book about Thor Heyerdahl, a Norwegian adventurer and ethnographer, and he, you know, famous Kon-Tiki story back in 1947, and everyone thought he was crazy because he said, look, I'm just gonna build a balsa wood raft and I'm just going to drift out into the Atlantic aimlessly without any things. And everyone was like, this guy is like, he's a Fruit Loop, you know. And then he had his small crew, and then they just drifted out, and then the balsa wood raft started to swell up and it bound the raft more, you know, more securely, so it was more durable. And then there was the problem of food, obviously, as they kept going out into the Pacific. Because they went from Peru, I should have said that at the start. They drifted off from Peru into the Pacific, and then every morning there was flying fish on their deck, and so they had food to eat every day, and they just kept going. And the irony is, and this is from Thor Heyerdahl's words, he said that because he had sort of this Taoist trust, and he always felt that he was part of something much bigger. He thought that he was connected with the universe, and so this was his experiment. And he said that as he did that, he began to feel like he was actually became part of the ecosystem of the ocean. So he began to sort of mimic the intelligence of a dolphin, you know. Oh, and then he ended up landing, like, it was like roughly 5,000 miles in the South Pacific. He went out to a small island called Tuamotos in French Polynesia. So it's an amazing story. Like, I'm not saying that in a sense for people to make a raft and just drift out into the Pacific. But it just goes to show that, you know, if you can just somehow trust that your life has a certain order and sort of rhythm with the world, then, you know, you can overcome anything.
Well, you remind me of a friend of mine who went to sea on a two-masted sailboat, and with his girlfriend, and they had planned to be at sea for 3 years, for 1,000 days, and without sight of land, without refueling, just to live off of nature and also whatever they carried in their boat that they could draw from, some, you know, like rice, and they could cook it, but they caught, you know, a lot of flying fish. But 10 days out at sea, and they were hit by a freighter in the middle of the night.
Hit by a freighter, wow.
In the middle of the night. And it clipped off, it ruined the front point tip of the boat. And there they were, and, you know, they had to rebuild some of the boat at sea.
Wow, yeah, that's an experience.
And then stayed at sea. It ended up, she got pregnant, and he had to leave her off after a year. She, and down in Australia, near where you are, but on the West Coast. And then and he went off for the next 2 years and just floated around in the oceans, and then came back to New York. And, but that's really serendipity also. That's, you know, being taken care of. All kinds of terrible things could have happened, and some, yeah, and one did right away. And but that's the point, is that we can't expect the smoothest sailing. No. But we can expect higher answers, let's call it.
Yeah. And you have to develop it. You have to also cultivate an ability to listen too. I mean, listen with, you know, more of an intuitive listening.
Opening, like, yeah, an open-minded.
Yeah.
You know, it's like not be stuck on, yeah, it has to be this way.
Like, for example, you know, we both told two good stories, but there's other tragic stories.
Yeah, where, yeah, life is lost and
it
went down.
Exactly. Like, for example, there's a lot of stories where people will just walk off into the desert and they think they're going to be okay. And it's like, no, it's, you know, if you walk into a desert, it's, you should listen to your gut instinct that you better go back to where there's green life, you know. So
right, so there is a a deeper knowing.
There's a deeper knowing.
One time I was about to go for a run in Central Park, and I ran over to Central Park and I was about to step on the park drive, and I heard, "Stop, don't do that." It's like, excuse me, I don't know who's talking to me, but I'm here for my run. And then I stepped again on the road and I heard again, "Stop, don't do that." And I said, "Well, thank you for sharing, but I'm here for my run. I'm going to go for a run." And within 4 miles, I came down with a stress fracture.
No, wow.
So, and yeah, I've had, great. I can give you many other stories too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Instructed by a voice that speaks to my brain, tells me what to do, and I've learned to be respectful of it. The hard,
yeah, of course. Well, that's it. The intuitive aspect, you know, we suppress so much in the modern world, like the in the hot cognition, because, you know, it's from a rational perspective, people don't like to talk about it. But the thing is that intuition is, it always calibrates with the environment. So it, like what you were doing when you were running, your intuitive aspect is saying you're going to have a stress fracture any moment, but you're not listening. You're rationalizing your run and you're just going for a run. And it's like, no, right. Stop.
Right.
Yeah. But we're so trained now to say, switch that off. That's just noise coming from the back of your head. Don't worry about that. And it's like, no, you should always listen to that. Not that it's always correct, because there can be intuitive errors for sure. But a lot of the time when you get a strong impulse like that, it is right, you know? So, and that comes back to also unity, you know what I mean? Like that aspect is connected to more of the universal consciousness, because it knows exactly what's going to happen for you, you know, to move you along. So,
yeah, but it's not, at times with me, it's not just sensing what my intuition is telling me. It's actually clear sentences that are, yeah, told to me against my wishes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because that's what it will do. Like, because, you know, if we look at us as we, say the rational person, the intuition doesn't care about that. The intuition will just say, this is how it's going to be. And you're like, but I want to keep running. And it's like, no, you're supposed to stop right now. And it's like, oh, okay. So, but we're so trained to turn it off and we don't listen to it that, you know, we come across a lot of, you know, prickly situations in our life because we don't do it, you know? So, the more we listen to that intuitive part, the more we sort of come into sync with more of that unified consciousness, you know? So that's why they always say in the West, in the East, sorry, trust is the paradox of unity, you know? So the more we trust, the more we feel that sense of oneness. So, and that comes back to also the intuition as well. The more we trust sort of that deeper aspect of ourself that knows what's sort of happening without us thinking what's going on, then we come more into that field as well.
So your book, Effortless Living, is really a way to learn how to be somebody who can learn to trust better. Because we can learn, or at least condition ourselves to live in greater trust in, you know, in the process, faith, trust in the process, and believe that we don't know any better about what the outcome should be. Let the universe take care of it.
Yes. Well, think about it this way, Peter. You know, I always say this to people who sort of lack trust. I said, everything that's happening now in the world, everything, Peter's life, my life, the guy down the road, his life, the lady at the shop, her life, everything that's happening is because everything in the past was meant to happen. It's because it's all moved us to this point right now.
Exactly.
Now, a lot of people don't like that explanation because they mean, so Genghis Khan was supposed to happen. So Adolf Hitler was supposed to happen.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, because people start thinking instantly negatively, you know, so they start to think in terms of good and bad. Now, a good, say for example, a good Taoist like Lao Tzu, he would say, get out of the idea of good and bad. This is just energy moving.
It's unfolding.
It's unfolding, yes. It's the evolutionary process of the cosmos unfolding.
And through what's wrong, that in our minds say, oh, we don't want another Hitler, then, you know, maybe we got to get rid of Trump, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, so you have this. So, you know, people need to think about that. So everything that's happened and why they are where they are, why they even exist, is because all that happened. You know,
right, exactly. So we need to trust the past also. But we're running out of time, unfortunately enough. And I want to, I lost my stopwatch on here. There it is. Sorry, I got distracted by my stopwatch. So Jason Gregory, you can be reached at jasongregory.com.org.
.org, yes.
.org. Good.
Thank you.
I remembered that. And your book, Effortless Living. And hopefully we'll have you back for more talks about life soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to do all these talks with you.
Mine too. Thanks so much. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HEART River.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.